You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Jennifer Parker. Jennifer, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's begin by talking about Open Lab. There's a number of projects I want to talk about, but can you tell us all a little bit about Open Lab and its history?
Sure. I started Open Lab about 5 years ago with a co-worker in astronomy, Enrico Ramirez Ruiz. We're at the University of California in Santa Cruz. And the idea came through a couple of different avenues. One was the budget crisis that we're experiencing in California at the time at the schools, and we're actually going through another version of that in the UC system coming up. We're about to sort of brace ourselves for a huge cut. But it was a time when we were cutting and rethinking about how we use spaces. And for me, it was a great opportunity to sort of, you know, breach this idea of saying, well, you know, maybe we could share. Wouldn't that be cool? Maybe we don't have to stay siloed in our different areas. Maybe we could actually create kind of interdisciplinary spaces or spaces that you could access regardless of your affiliation with a department or your major as a student. So, and I also had a student who was a physics major with Enrico who teaches, like I said, in astronomy. And this was a student that was going back and forth. You know, I was, as an artist, really excited to be teaching at a research university and not at a, you know, an art school. You know, part of being there was about being part of this sort of research agenda. And so the student was going back and forth between these two faculty and, you know, art and astrophysics, and we found ourselves really complementing one another and thinking about how to approach the ideas. And it was sort of through those conversations that we decided to start Open Lab. And it's been sort of growing ever since. And it was really wanting to figure out how to work with material or research or data in ways that weren't assigned to any one discipline. So, you know, people will come into the lab and say, oh, I want to work on this project. And I say, well, you know, what kind of skill sets do you imagine needing? You sort of envision it a little bit like filmmaking, right? You have somebody who's in wardrobe, you have somebody doing lighting, you have somebody with a script. Everybody has these different kinds of roles with the one agenda of making a film. In our scenario, it'll be anything from having somebody in astrophysics to ocean sciences to computer science with digital art or literature, and sort of combining these different skill sets to get together to solve problems and ask questions.
It seems that there's two issues here. One, you know, academically, like you're saying, to share resources doesn't always happen. There's, you know, that must have been a challenge in itself. How did that go over, or was it received very well? Because, you know,
well, you know, it was kind of mixed. And, you know, because at the time I was teaching the Foundry, which is this giant sort of metal, you know, I teach traditionally in the sculpture area. That's my background, sculpture and kinetic art with some video and performance. And that's obviously changed with technology and microchip controllers and our ways to sort of make things move and connect and other ways that keep the static from being static. Although I always tell my students, you know, when it breaks, it better look good because it's going to break. This digital art stuff is never very solid. Anyway, so we had this large space. It was a foundry. I teach metal foundry fabrication stuff. And at the time, we were doing some of the processes there, which included the burnout kiln. Anyway, it wasn't being used, so I asked the dean at that time, I said, could I use this space? And could I reimagine it to be something that would be different than just in the arts, that would actually be an interdisciplinary space? And we had a new dean at the time, who's been there now for 5 years, Dean Yeager, who was really open to wanting to see faculty start research centers and try new stuff. Regardless of what the sort of outcome was, it was this idea of if you start something, who knows what could happen. But he was really encouraging and gave me some seed money to do it. Which was helpful and just sort of infrastructure. And then we sort of was able to pull together very quickly students from the mechatronics project group that I run in the Digital Arts and New Media program, which is set up to be collaborative research. So it's already kind of programmatically envisioned so that you would have a one project group for a year that would be working together, and the students that come into that program are getting an MFA in collaborative research, but also are doing their own kinds of projects. So we could then come up with an idea and say, okay, well, let's do this. For example, we're doing a project on phytoplankton. Okay, well, let's go. We want to make kind of a game out of it. At the same time, we also want to make a physical installation, something that you can play, you know, something that would work virtually, but also create a kind of space for hands-on learning and thinking about different ideas. So that prompted us to, you know, talk to colleagues in computer science, and ocean science, and engineering, and electrical engineering, and find students who might be interested in collaborating together on the projects, or at least consulting. And sometimes,
so let's talk about an example of one. I mean, phytoplankton was one, if that was something that actually happened, but in the early days of it, or it could be, you know, recently.
At the beginning, you know, we kind of stuck with what we knew. So we did astrophysics or astronomy and art. And we really dedicated a whole summer institute to figuring out how would we do this? What does this mean to create an open lab or to create these collaborative projects? How do we structurally make that happen? How do we make it physically happen as well as fit within sort of research agendas so that there could be outcomes at the end? And then, of course, how do you assess this stuff? Because it's not art and it's not science and it's sort of sitting in this valley in between. So we got colleagues together. Enrico asked his colleagues in astrophysics, he said, let's do four projects and let's have the leads of these projects be people who really know the information, who have research questions that have been going on for years, and have them lead each one of these project groups. And we'll give them a couple of graduate students and a couple of undergraduates in different fields and see what they come up with in 2 months, and we'll have a show of whatever that is. So during that time, we also shared sort of our different ways of making. I mean, in some ways, astrophysics and astronomy are very easy to think about in relation to art because we're visualizing the world, right? We're making pictures. We're trying to demonstrate how things work or what we think about. So we would do sort of workshops in anything from different software visualization tools that they're using in astronomy to mold making and machining, so that the people were going back and forth to the different kinds of skill sets, or at least experiencing them, not maybe necessarily being good at them, but having an opportunity to know what was available for these projects that would be developed. And from that, we made our first sort of art and astrophysics exhibition. And that was really successful, and it landed a bunch of different kinds of projects that wouldn't otherwise be made or thought about. And I think it's a kind of way of thinking that's not about answering questions as much as it is about asking questions and sparking interest in people to want to go and learn more about sort of different kinds of ideas that you know come out of this research. So the more in-depth studies are not in the pieces themselves, right? You're not going to get a lot of information about playing a galactic bowling game for, you know, learning about black holes. But you are going to think about this idea of what is a black hole, and here I am trying to, like, throw a star into the middle of a black hole. This is sort of virtually through a kind of interactive game, but I'm not, you know, it's making me think about what that means. It's making me think about scale. It's making me think about motion. It's making me try to understand this really difficult concept in a kind of more tangible way.
No, it's really interesting. You know, it's also about bridging different worlds, right, of research, of science, and these are all within the university, but it seems that this is still a rare thing that happens. You know, there's, I was talking to, I don't know if you know the artist Joe Davis, who's done a lot of
mm-hmm.
work with astronomers. He knows his work. So I interviewed him. It was fascinating. I wasn't far from him, so I went up to Harvard to meet him and see the lab and meet people there. And it was amazing that he started walking me around and showing me people, and he brought me into the head of that department, which is George Kuchar. And, you know, George is this amazing guy who basically, you know, did all these extraordinary things and was the one who's sort of overseeing Joe. And now Joe is an artist of some renown. They don't give him money, but they give him a lab. And I asked about funding and what about mm-hmm. funding for him, for collaborations. And I went to Harvard and also to MIT, where he has a lab. And both people were kind of dumbfounded. Like, funding, there isn't any. You know, in science, we don't have it. And it seemed kind of that there wasn't much experience in even how you'd get funding like that. Because from the art world, I hear something different, which is like what you're saying, collaborations with scientists are possible and how exciting it is. And the science world was sort of saying, remarkably, and this is obviously in an academic setting, that our funding is based in often things that can be produced, that can be monetized. And we don't know that, you know, the arts can be, but obviously research can be. So I guess in a mm-hmm. long-winded way, I'm saying, do you see that at all? Because it feels to me like you're making inroads there. I would tell these guys, well, there's kind of a trend in the art world to work with scientists. And they said, we've never heard of that.
Right. I mean, I would say it's maybe the trend is maybe now, I don't know, it's 5 or 6 years in the making, and now everything is art and science. I think it's complicated, and you know, there's the STEM to STEAM movement. Have you heard about that?
No, tell me about that.
STEAM. Oh, okay. Well, you know, this has been going on for the last 5 years at least, and it's, you know, here we are, we're focusing on STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math, and we're putting all our resources for the last 20 years. The NSF is saying this is what we care about. We have to make people learn about STEM and care about STEM from K-12 all the way through to into college. How do we teach STEM education? And it was only, you know, within the last 5 or 6 years where we said, well, you can't teach it without art. It needs to have ways of thinking that are about creativity, that are about exploring things, that things that can happen in music, things that can happen in dance, things that are embodied in your understanding of knowing, in order to think about why that's an interesting math question or why we want to have creative engineers. It's a sort of, you know, system-based, holistic way of thinking, and you can't
right.
actually teach. So, you know, in the last 5 years, there's been a movement from STEM to STEAM in which people have been trying to figure out how to be more inclusive of the arts in STEM education. And it's also been something that's reflected in the NEA. The NEA and the NSF have always sort of had different departments in different parts of the city and different buildings. And the NEA was getting all these kind of arts and science-y proposals that the NSF would never consider. They're like, that's too out there. That's like playful science. That's sort of citizen artists. That's instead of the citizen scientists. Like, this is a kind of hybrid combination. We don't do that. We only find these categories like this. And you find the scientists sort of going through the list of funding opportunities and saying, okay, I'm going to change my research to fit the funding I can find, because that's the only way for me to exist on campus. The only way for me to have graduate students is to get these grants. Where the
right.
artists, we don't have terminal degrees of PhDs. We only have an MFA. So we can't even apply for the PhD or for the NSF grants because you have to have a PhD. So we were sort of turning the NEA into aspects of the NEA into these chunklets that would do sort of soft science, if you want to say, or sort of citizen science-based ideas. And I, you know, I did a brown bag lunch at the NSF like 5 or 6 years ago with some colleagues in the arts. And we said, let's go talk to the NSF. Let's get them understanding that the sort of broader impact of research can go beyond just your journal or the conference or, you know, the K-12 curriculum. Like, there's other ways to impact the public. And we can actually do that really well as artists who engage with the public on a regular basis. So, you know, we organized this meeting with the Brown Bag Lunch with the NSF to sort of talk about the different kinds of research that's happening in the arts. And I also invited a couple of officers from the NEA to come. And we all sort of sat down for the first time and said, okay, what's going on here? How can we broaden the conversation or talk about these works that are in between? And, you know, there's been legislation. There's some people who've been working on this for a while, with Leonardo Magazine and the SEED initiatives. You know, it was RISD looking at even talking with Congress. RISD, John Mendetta, who was sort of brought this initiative. Because we need to get the taxpayers involved in understanding how we spend money for research. And where do we put, you know, we're putting this huge millions and millions of dollars into the sciences and this little chunk into sort of arts and culture. Does that make sense? How do we want to reconfigure that? Or can we create these places where they're combined when they're necessary? Not saying that everything has to be a hybrid, you know, collaborative experience, but for the work that's out there that's being done like that, can we actually do a better job funding it? So those conversations, you know, take, you know, it takes forever to change policy. It takes forever to get these.
And then I'm trying to think, what year was that that meeting happened? What year was that?
We did the Brown Bag, I don't know, I'd say it was 5 years ago maybe. But
okay.
The STEM to STEAM, that's been going on for at least 6 or 7 years or maybe more. You know, it was one of those synergies where I was like, I wanted to create an art and science lab and didn't know of any other places besides maybe the MIT Media Lab. Like, who's doing this? You know, as an undergraduate, I had gone to the University of California in Santa Barbara, and I was at the College of Creative Studies there, which is this teeny, teeny little shack on this giant campus of students that are kind of treated like graduate students, even though they're undergraduates, and they're allowed to sort of just work creatively, whether you're there as a mathematician or a physicist or a poet or an artist, you kind of just got to make it up as you went along. And so I kind of figured I would be able to do that at Santa Cruz, and it wasn't the case. But I had to build the bridge to use it. And it's been little, very little funding. I think artists are able to use resources around them that they have. We don't have $1 million or $500,000 grants and budgets that we maintain. We just like, well, let's just do it. You know, we're going
right.
to be making prototypes of ideas. We make one-of-a-kind things that we have to make up all the time as objects that exist in the world. We can certainly do this, you know. It's like, you know, we have nothing
right.
to lose, but we don't have to prove anything to this granting agency. So.
And what happened at the end of that meeting? What were some of the things that you drew from it, where the basically scientists and artists are talking, NEA and everything are talking together. What was there something that came out of that never was done, that should have been done, or I don't know?
I think it was part of a conversation that had already been initiated. We had talked about it. You know, groups had gotten together in consultation with the NSF already and trying to bridge this. So we were maybe the third wave. We were not the sort of starters of this kind of art and science thinking at the NSF and NEA level. But, I think I walked away going, oh, okay, that's what the NSF feels like. Okay, that's the guy that's the face that goes with the officer's name. And he, you know, they responded to our presentation or ideas, you know, 4 or 5 faculty in the arts across different kinds of work showed our research and the kind of work we're doing and how it relates to science. The officers were all really surprised, and they tried to think about the initiatives that they are in charge of, how they could broaden them or think about them or, you know, imagine different ways that they could consider working, having an artist work with a scientist. That being said, they're not going to change their policy in any kind of way other than to maybe look at the sort of interdisciplinary, broader impact piece of the grants that they give out. So there still has to be, you know, agendas. There still has to be a PhD person, but there are some grants that they're offering on the smaller scale for NSF, like 50K or whatever it is, as sort of seed ideas to see what could be generated. So, you know, because I've been teaching at UC Santa Cruz for 15 years, and for the first time in the last 5 or 6 years, scientists have been coming over and sort of knocking on our door saying, we need help. We need somebody to help us visualize this. We need somebody to help us think about how we might educate people about climate change. We've completely failed. I don't know why people are even questioning climate change. Can you help us? Can you help us visualize this information and get people understanding in a much more tangible way than sort of the lonely polar bear floating on the ice cap out at sea? And so, you know, and it's not even that as artists that we're interested in any way of illustrating science. It's really about starting from the beginning of these questions and figuring out different ways of solving it or asking the questions to solve along the way that would be engaging and also inform research in new and different ways that we haven't allowed. And, you know, it's nothing new. This is how we used to do it 1,000 years ago. People didn't have titles. You just kind of went out there and tried to figure stuff out.
Well, yeah, but what is new is really collaboration between fields that don't necessarily intuitively understand one another. I mean, you know, these divisions are even in the art world. I don't know why I'm thinking of the example of a friend of mine, Claude Wampler, who's a performance artist and also a visual artist. When after I saw her and was talking to her at the kitchen in between a performance, she said, I don't know how we got onto it, but she said, you know, the people who I know, I'm surprised to see you here because I'm known really as a visual artist, but she said the people who are in the visual arts world never come to my performances, and the people in the performance art world never come to my visual art shows, you know? and so I think it's not just like the same old thing. What as I'm reading it, part of what you're doing and what's exciting about it is the idea of collaborations where the professions don't see that happening naturally. You have to make an effort, right?
Yeah, I think so. And for me, it's really just been project-based. And I think it's also been through being able to sort of run this project group for the last 5 years through the Digital Arts and New Media program, but also then being able to sort of open up avenues to the public, you know, as a public institution. And with public funding, I feel like there's a way that we need to sort of invite the public or researchers that are not professionals in the university to think about ideas with us and to look at how we might solve them together. So often,
yeah, that's right. That's,
for
that's
me,
very
it's
interesting.
Project-based. And
right.
It's really about kind of, you can't just collaborate because it sounds good on paper. Like, it really takes trusting other people's ideas, a kind of friendship, a colleague, something that's built over time, you know? Like, there's some people I don't want to work with, and they could be the smartest people in the world, but we don't jive, you know? So I think
right.
The collaboration has to be, like, a genuine kind of interest in something, but also a kind of working methodology that makes sense to each other, you know, or that you're willing to sort of give your time to because you believe the collective group, the dynamic there is strong enough to pull the thing off. And of course we have failures where we just, you know, ideas drop off by the wayside because it's just not happening. But, you know, I think...
Right,
but
that's how it works. So let me ask you this. If and I think this is kind of a good way of wrapping up perhaps. This was your, you know, your idea to launch this media lab. It is a collaborative vision now of how it will proceed. If you were, you know, had tons more funding, had the ability to do even more, what would the big picture be? And I know this is I'm reaching here, so you can do whatever you want with this. It could be in a few years or 10 years.
Right.
But if it was overfunded,
no.
And this whole vision was really everything worked out the way you'd love it to, what would that mean structurally? How would this function on a larger scale within a university or other universities?
Well, for me, within the universities, it would mean that we would be hiring people, more people who work this way, and that we could have a kind of curriculum that worked with having more than one faculty from each discipline. You know, that the sort of bean counting that happens. Like right now, I co-teach a class with an engineer, and we both get half credit for that. So if we were able to financially change that picture and say, wow, you're teaching, you know, just as much as she's teaching. This is one class that really equals two professors, and how can we, it's structural. How can we structure this so that we're getting the most from our researchers in a collaborative way together, but at the same time creating a curriculum where students can do hands-on learning, that they can take their ideas and make things happen and not just understand the math or not just understand how somebody else figured it out through reading and writing of other researchers. So, you know, for me, it would be really about kind of reconfiguring how we teach in the university system. There's obviously always going to be a need for specialties, and there's going to be a need for people to know one thing, and not everybody needs this hybridity, but to allow the space to be there and to sort of take the teacher out of the sort of I'm the one that knows, I'm going to stand here and lecture to this class for 2 hours twice a week, and then you guys are all going to leave. And we just wasted a moment of 150 people in one room listening to me. We have the technology that you can listen to me online, and maybe when we get together, we can actually do something, right? Mm-hmm. We can experiment, we can play, we can try ideas that we can break up into different kinds of groups. So for me, it would really be about challenging the systems that we've created, some of which work really great, and others need to be reconfigured to sort of give the students a more broader kind of education that can actually help them think about hard-to-solve problems that people want and need. And I think it gives them creative thinking skills that they can't get in any other way. You know, we have the tools, we have the information. Now we need to do something with it, you know, and I think those critical thinking skills, creative making skills, you know, in Santa Cruz, we're really close to Silicon Valley, which has the big startup of everything, and we also have kind of the maker DIY movement. And I think combined, there's a lot of energy to be innovative and creative and try stuff. So for me, it would really be about expanding that lab for students on campus with the kind of curriculum that is, you know, it's in the 4-year and 2 years programs for the MFA, and then looking at the MFA as not the terminal degree, but really thinking about it as the PhD, because that's where we lose in the game of time in arts. Because, you know, in the UK, if you're doing a PhD, you have 5 years to play and ask these questions and make things and really push the boundaries of arts research. Here, 2 years, 3 years is just not enough. So looking at trying to figure out how to bring the PhD in so that they can be counterparts to the other PhDs, I think would also really reinvent how we're thinking about art in relation to these other disciplines. So, you know, I think I'd also get rid of all the names. You know, art and science, we don't have to define them anymore. Like, can we just, like, work on problems or projects or reconfigure some of these names into something that's a little more open or less known?
Yes, that would be wonderful. Jennifer, thanks so much for talking with us today. It's really been a pleasure talking about the Media Lab and Open Lab, rather, and learning more about it. Thanks again for talking with us today.
Thank you for inviting me and making the time.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.